some golden oldies.
You've got mail.
The white noise of the electronic past has sucked in many sounds of the future. Analog TV, rotary phones, mechanical typewriters. When your memory is a museum.
You've got mail.
Audio die-off, endangered sound waves, the future we hardly knew ye on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning, everyone. Wednesday, June 17th. We are curating the Museum of the Audio Past, Endangered Sounds, this morning. Public radio listeners know what I'm talking about, but we have a special look at that. I'm John Hockenberry, and here with me, co-hosting, Femi Oke, once again.
Good morning, everybody. So coming up this hour, we get the latest on the situation in Iran, focusing on how Iranians are communicating with each other and the rest of the world. Also, the Obama administration presents a new set of rules today for the financial system. We will talk about what's expected. Those stories coming up, but first, headlines.
And in the headlines, President Obama is set to announce expanded government authority over the U.S. financial markets today. He says rules and the reliability that stems from them are key to a successful new system.
That's what makes American capitalism thrive. That's why people invest in this country, because they have confidence that if they read a prospectus, somebody's made sure that what's in there is true.
The new measures include more supervisory powers for the Federal Reserve and the establishment of the Consumer Financial Protection Agency to oversee financial products like mortgages. A full discussion with Peter Morici a little later on in the program. Later today, the president is expected to sign a memo to extend benefits to the lesbian and gay partners of federal employees. That's according to senior administration officials. Last week, the Obama administration was criticized by some gay rights groups for upholding the Defense of Marriage Act. It allows individual states to choose whether to recognize same-sex marriage. Marriages performed in other states. Femi?
Overseas, Iran's Revolutionary Guard says that it will crack down on online coverage of protests over the country's contested election. Opposition supporters have used Iranian websites as well as social networking sites like Twitter to organize protests. Another day of demonstrations is expected. That comes as the U.S. State Department says that it has asked Twitter to postpone scheduled maintenance in order to keep information flowing from inside Iran. Here's the State Department spokesman, Ian Kelly.
These kinds of social media played a very important role in democracy, spreading the word about what was going on.
The State Department says that the move allows the U.S. government access to eyewitness accounts of what's happening on the ground in Iran.
We're going to be talking about that all morning. A lot of history there. Big economic indicator due out today. Retail inflation for the last month is expected to be up a bit. Yesterday, we learned that wholesale inflation rose just 0.2% in May, less than analysts expected. On Wall Street, the Dow and S&P both fell 1.3%. The Dow kicks off this morning at 85.05. The S&P starts trade at 9.12. We're all museum curators. I was talking about endangered sounds earlier.
Okay.
We want to empower all of you to be museum curators. We're going to be talking about endangered sounds in our future shock world. You've Got Mail, actually, is obsolete almost the moment it was created. There we go. But what other stuff have we left behind? Going to drive-in movies? You be a movie or be a museum curator for us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytakeatthetakeaway.org.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at KnightFoundation.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway.
We begin in Tehran, where moments ago we spoke with the BBC's correspondent in Tehran, Marcus George. Marcus, thanks for joining us. And first of all, there is a third day of street demonstrations in Tehran. Tell us, first of all, your restrictions on covering those demonstrations and what you've been able to learn.
Yesterday, we received official notification that the activities of the foreign media here in Tehran would not and should not cover any illegal activity, any illegal protest. That was sent to us by the Ministry of Culture and Islamic Guidance, and they were very stringent on that. So effectively, it means that we cannot go out in the streets with recording equipment, with cameras, and actually cover any demonstrations or any events which they do not give us specific permission permission to do. So fairly stringent restrictions, and it obviously means that we can only really tell you about what's going on from eyewitness reports and so on, which we hear from.
Well, before we get to those eyewitness reports, what is the sense of people in Tehran? Do they feel as though things are orderly or that they are spiraling out of control in some sense?
I think they're very, very aware that at the moment it's a very tense situation, and yet for the time being it's maintaining its peacefulness. There have been millions of people on the streets over the past 2 or 3 days, both for pro-Ahmadinejad rallies and protests and pro-opposition protests led by the leading opposition candidate Mir Hussein Mousavi. So there's been a lot of people here. The lid has been kept on those tensions so far. I think behind the scenes, amongst the political elite, there have been a lot of negotiations to try and calm down, to try and ensure that this doesn't boil over. But at the same time, there are all the ingredients for it to do just that. And so I think at the moment, state TV, they're effectively having lots of guests on, including members of parliament here, saying, well, we need to be aware of our language. We need to realise and we need to understand that the Iranian people are unified and that they're not against this system, and that they just should be allowed to continue their protests. And that's on state TV.
Marcus, how much of this is a heated argument over the conduct of the election itself and the procedures for recounting? And how much of this is more of a cultural conflict deeper within Iran between a traditional pro-Ahmadinejad Islamic Iran and a cynical protesting intellectual elite that may be younger than the traditional crowd?
Well, I think that's exactly it. Those are the divisions which you have here. On the one hand, you've had people who really they understand the system under which they live, and they weren't rallying against the system. But what they wanted was a free and fair vote. The longer that goes on, the longer this problem goes on, I think the actual system comes into question. The actual authority of the supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, who's getting more and more involved day by day in the actual politics of it all. And I think that people are really beginning to question that authority now, certainly in the urban capital, Tehran. So it is getting quite difficult. And I think the longer it goes on, the more strained the whole Islamic Republic will be because of these problems.
Marcus George, what is the state of the recount that was announced yesterday, and how will that information be disseminated to the people? And then I have one more question before we go.
We heard yesterday that the Guardian Council was giving this election result its full consideration as regards the complaints in certain areas of Tehran and around the country about what's perceived to, or what's claimed to be fraudulent and rigged results. So it says it's going to go ahead with that under the guidance of the supreme leader. We don't know exactly when they're going to report back. To begin with, we heard it was going to take about 10 days. It may well take sooner now, because frankly, the longer this goes on, as I said, the more stressful it becomes. So we will find out at some point. However, it's not enough for the opposition. They're still calling for a full rerun of the election,
sure,
claiming that the whole thing has been a sham.
Finally, Marcus, the government has sort of a fine line to march here. In some sense, it's in the government's interest to show the world that there are protests and that they are permitted in Iran, yet it's also not in their interest for things to be perceived as spiraling out of control. How do they balance this?
Well, it has been a balance. Yesterday morning, we were even able to make, for the first time in 2 or 3 days, international phone calls. We seem to be unfettered. Access to BBC channels here in Iran were completely unaffected. Iranians could watch those without any problem at all. And then all of a sudden, an hour or two later, they were cut off. The international telecommunications system was cut off. And, of course, as you know, we received this official notification that we wouldn't be able to report from the streets of Tehran any longer. So it seems that it's going hour by hour. They are trying to try every which way in which to ease things up, and then all of a sudden clamp things down again.
Right.
And it really is very short-term decisions which have been taken here by the authorities.
And hour by hour, the social media around the world reverberate with their own headlines. Our thanks to Marcus George, who joined us from Tehran. Thank you, Marcus.
Thank you.
So we want to get a sense of how people outside of Iran are getting information about what's going on in the country. One of those ways is BBC Persian TV. موسیقی و بیشتر از موسیقی
Televisione Farsie BBC.
Joining us now is Kazra Naji. He's a specialist correspondent for BBC Persian Television in London. He's also the author of the book Ahmadinejad, The Secret History of Iran's Radical Leader. Kazra, thank you so much for being part of The Takeaway this morning. Have to ask you first off, you are a very famous Iranian journalist. What are you doing in London?
Well, I would have loved to be in Tehran at the moment, but the authorities in Iran are not allowing us to report from Iran. Nobody from the BBC Persian Television is given accreditation to work from Tehran. So in the end, I have ended up here, staying here, monitoring the events from London.
Now, as a Persian speaker, as a Persian broadcasting service, you have incredible access. But what are the challenges of getting this story together and then broadcasting it back into Iran?
Well, when we started at first, given the fact that the authorities were not going to give us accreditation to have a correspondent in Tehran, we thought it's going to be difficult because our access to information is going to be limited. But in actual fact, in practice, it has been a lot better than we expected. We're getting a lot of telephone calls. We're getting a lot of information. BBC has correspondent in Tehran. There are agencies in normal times, Reuters, AP, AFP, they're all there. We're getting information and pictures from all these places, plus the fact that we have a very popular interactive program during which it's an hour a long program during the day when people ring in from throughout the country to talk about a certain subject that is the topic of the day. And this has been an incredible success in the sense that we're getting opinion and information from these people from throughout the country about these. One thing that stuck in my mind was when the fiasco in Gaza was underway, and we were getting telephone calls from various towns and cities throughout the country for and against Israelis, for and against Hamas and the Palestinians,
so
and a major and very lively debate.
Let me bring you back to this particular story, getting information from your audience. Tell me a one story that's actually stood out in your mind.
Well, in the last few days, we've had callers from Iran telling us about what's happening in their localities. Like, you know, we had calls from Shiraz saying that, you know, there's a demonstration outside my door and this is what's happening kind of thing. And we've been getting quite a few of those. And, of course, you have the YouTube, you have the Twitter, you have the Facebook, you have all that. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. Communication in Iran these days, during the days of troubles in Iran, is limited. Like yesterday, we had this huge demonstration in Tehran, and we didn't have that much information from the actual scene of the demonstration because, A, mobile phone networks had been cut off, their electricity had been cut off, this is a huge demonstration, so it takes you a long time to walk towards a place where you can get in a car and go to some place where you can actually make a phone call. SMS, short message system, has been cut off, and dial-up system of the internet is very difficult to get through, and when you do get through, the speed is so slow that it's a torture to upload anything, but nevertheless, people do.
Kazra Naji is a specialist correspondent for the BBC Persian Television Service in London. He's also an Iranian journalist. You were in Tehran in 1979, so we need to get you back to talk about that experience and the similarities between now and then. But for now, Kazra Naji, thank you very much for joining
us. My pleasure.
It's interesting, the challenge there, because the government is able to weigh in these social media as well as citizens.
Well,
so it's difficult to sort through.
Exactly. How do you know who's tweeting
Indeed.
To you?
Indeed.
You're listening to The Takeaway with Femi Ok and John Hockenberry.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.